Our next moderator, Dave Mellis, is the lead software developer for Arduino, an open source microcontroller development platform. Yes, we know. he's also a graduate student in Leah Buckley's high-low-tech group at the MIT MIDI Lab, who will talk a little bit later, where he investigates tools and processes to help people create interactive objects. He has a master's degree from the Interaction Design Institute, Ivrea, and helped to found the Copenhagen Institute of Interaction Design. Thank you.
Thank you. Can you guys hear me? We heard a lot, I guess, about the kind of business and manufacturing sides of open source hardware. And for this panel, sort of titled Law, but also I think I was thinking of it generally as like, what is the open source in open source hardware? So all of those issues around kind of the source and the sharing and the legal issues and sort of broader questions of, all of the panelists convinced me not to do a presentation, so I just wanted to start by asking them all to introduce themselves and their relationship to open source hardware, because I think we have people here from kind of a number of different perspectives. So if you guys maybe just want to go down.
Sure, I guess I can start. I'm Michael Weinberg. I work with an organization called Public Knowledge. We're based in Washington, D.C. We do a lot of work on a number of different sort of innovation policy fields, some copyright reform things, a lot of network neutrality work. We got some good news on white spaces today. And the thing that kind of ties all of our issues together is trying to find a way to make sure that innovation can happen and sort of clear the way for innovation. So the reason that I'm here is partially because I think that this open hardware stuff is really awesome, and my organization lets me chase stuff like that. And also because it seems like open hardware is going to be the next way that people who are outside of major companies get to do really interesting, creative things. And it's important to our organization to make sure that you guys are free to do those things. And there are not barriers, whatever they may be, to doing that. So I'm trying to get more involved in the open hardware movement and learn a little bit more about what's going on, so when there's a time where you start hearing, oh, this horrible thing is happening in Washington, we're prepared as Public Knowledge to be there and say, no, we need to protect these people who are doing great innovative things in open hardware, and this is something that needs to be allowed to flourish.
Thanks. I'm Wendy Seltzer. Like Michael, I'm a lawyer. A lawyer who I spent a few years working at Electronic Frontier Foundation and then moved into academia to try to study better the challenges that openness meets from the legal community. A lot of the intellectual property law seems structured around closure, and sometimes that closure infects even those who are trying to do open, especially in the space of patents, where even if you've never patented anything or gone near a patent document, you might have someone come up once you've become successful or threatened to become successful, knocking on your door with a claim that you infringed their patents. And that doesn't seem to be what the law should be doing in promoting the progress of science and useful arts. So I'm now working with Berkman Center at Harvard and with Princeton's Center for Information Technology Policy, trying to study openness and what we as lawyers and policymakers can do to better promote openness and help you in the work that you're doing.
Thank you. Can you hear me? Yeah. My name is Xavier Carcel. I'm a telecommunications hardware engineer. And I'm very glad to be here today, in the invitation of Alicia and Haya. Also, I'm glad here because I think I represent some kind of my European fellows that would love to be there and discuss that with us, because in Europe we had many, and we have many open hardware projects. I think about the German guys, especially from the CCC. I can name many open hardware projects that they launched in conjunction with other European guys. Can think about OpenMoCo, which was a GSM phone, OpenPCD RFID reader, OpenBSC, which is the open source BTS developed by the Harald Veld and other folks, and so on. So I think they would love to be there, and I guess they are watching the stream from overseas, and maybe they will react online. I'm coming from a telecommunication background. Since many years, telecommunication has been a closed world, either software or hardware. That can be the chips, that can be the protocols implementation in software. And we've seen a shift starting from the software part in the telecommunication with more and more open source implementations of voice over IP, now GSM stacks, and so on, pushing openness into the hardware. And now in the hardware, we see two ways of opening that, either, let's say, reverse engineering some part of the telecommunication hardware or designing new hardware more open. I'm here to represent the OHANDA initiative, which is the Open Hardware and Design Alliance that is kind of irritated from lots of thinking and initiative in Europe, and also in conjunction with people in Taiwan, because we organized a conference in 2001 called the Open Tech Summit in Taipei, which was the occasion to mix the people developing embedded devices, hardware devices, and people developing open source software. And sometimes the people developing the hardware there, they were just using open source stacks, and they didn't care about any GPL license so far. And that was the occasion to try to exchange that. So that was in 2007. And Harald Veld is a great, as we are talking about law, is a great defender of the GPL license with a portal called gpl-violation.org, where he tries to put some limit on that.
Hi, I'm Matt Stack, and I am a hardware hacker. This is, I say that with so pluses and minuses, I suppose, but I wear a couple different hats. At Liquidware, I am a hardware hacker. Most of Liquidware's clients we've not talked about today are actually companies. They're Fortune 100, 500 companies and the Department of Defense. And the discussions I have with them around intellectual property and what is open source are really come down to contracts and licenses. There's a lot of discussion today about DIY in the community. But largely what Liquidware does is it brings open source, my vision is to bring open source into the enterprise, into the community space, out of the DIY and into embedded companies. So that's one hat I wear. The other hat I wear is at 3LP, and at 3LP I buy and sell patents. So I work with lawyers on a regular basis, but there it really is around manipulating the where patents are, who owns patents, and what role they have. I think the core question, why I'm so fascinated by open source hardware, is because I think it's a question not of whether or how open or closed it is, but I think it is, open hardware is a set of levers. What do you open? What do you keep? Do you keep intellectual property? Do you give it away? Do you keep a brand? Do you give away schematics? Vice versa. I think it's a set of choices, and to me, I don't think that it's always obvious or binary.
Hello, I'm Peter Brown. I'm the Executive Director at the Free Software Foundation. I'm here because free software needs to have hardware that works with free software. We've tried over the past year or so to work with manufacturers to encourage them to make sure that their device drivers are free software, or they provide information to us so that we can produce those drivers, and to encourage manufacturers to actually produce specific hardware to our designs, which will be therefore fully functional with free software. That hasn't gone too well, to be honest. So I'm here today really to kind of speak to this community and say that, you know, there's a real opportunity, I think, for the people in this community and the free software community to find cooperation, to work on cooperation, and hopefully produce hardware to a specification that the free software community cares about, and that we can then promote to our audience, to our community, and hopefully find for someone in here an entrepreneur bring hardware to this community who care about freedom. They don't care about whether it's open. They care about whether they have personal freedom. They don't want to be in control of other people. They want to have their freedom. And so also I want to talk here today a little bit more about bringing in some reasoning about why it is you're doing what you're doing. And maybe there's a layer of this community that cares about the issue of freedom. And so just to spark some of that debate.
Hello, my name is Wendell Oske. I am one half of Evil Med Scientist Laboratories, which is a project blog, and I'm also a developer of open source hardware that we sell at our web store, evilmedscience.com. I am also one of the people who's interested in the definition of open hardware, and that's largely because I'd just be able to like to use open hardware licenses to release our projects to the community. So I'm hoping to discuss the definition and licenses and how we move forward from here.
Cool. I think that may be a nice segue. I was going to ask for each of you to maybe say what is it you think really is the key to open source hardware, because we've been talking a lot about this. You know, is it a license? Is it a set of practices? Is it, is it just the community that's sharing? And so I don't know if you guys wanted to share some perspectives on like what is it that you think of when you think of open source hardware?
I'm happy to kick it off. Open hardware, I think, is to me, it's an explicit set of decisions we make about what we open and what we close. So I think, in general, we all tend to trend on the open, hardware hacking, releasing schematics. But there are always elements, and I think you heard that all day, there are always elements that we keep, we close, whether it's a patented interface to modules, whether it's a brand, whether it's a distribution channel. It may not even be intellectual property. It could be a very tightly controlled distribution. We don't sell to everybody. You know, you may not sell to everybody. So that there are some things that you keep, and there are some things that you give away. So I believe open source is always a set of decisions. I think open hardware is those decisions applied to the creation of schematic hardware.
So I read the definition, and I thought it was interesting. And obviously, it takes its impetus from the open source definition. And today it's been very interesting hearing some people talk about why they do open hardware. And some people spoke about having, you know, giving more opportunity to other people. Some people did speak about freedom today. Now, one thing I have an issue with, in the sense when I look at this definition, is to what end point are you working? What's the end point? It's very hard to write a definition if you don't know what you're actually trying to attain. And certainly from the free software movement's perspective, that's the problem we see with open source. It's where are you actually trying to go? And if you have a reason, if you know what you're after, which is the lowest common user needs to have control over the technology they use, that's our purpose. So is that somehow a purpose with the open hardware community? Is there a purpose to it? Because if you can identify that, it makes your definition then very robust. And when something goes wrong, unintended consequences come about, you're able to react and adjust your definition because you know what you were trying to attain. One of the problems we had, Bruce Perrins was speaking earlier today, one of the problems we've had is the popularity of the term open source, and because corporations supported that term because they didn't want to talk about freedom, is that open source definition then led us to a place where today we have all these devices running open source and you can't modify them. So you have no user freedom. So if you don't know what you're trying to attain, that's where you can go. An unintended consequence: they wanted to popularize free software with the corporate world, and they ended up getting to a place which free software doesn't appreciate. So one thing I would like to maybe see is some, what are we trying to attain with this definition? And then when you write a license, you'll know whether that license is protecting your interests.
So I think I would differentiate a bit between the norms and the law around open hardware. As I think normatively we can want and aim for a platform, a set of tools and components that give us the freedom to build, to explore, to experiment, to sell, to commercialize, to go off in unexpected directions, even to reach back to John Wilbank's earlier comments, to develop the unexpected. And yet we can't always codify all of those freedoms in law, because a major difference between the hardware and the software arenas is that we have different tools. Copyright gives us one set of rights around to control software by default. It gives us less of that control over hardware. Patent gives us a different set of rights, but those are messy and often spill into areas that we don't want. And so a note of caution that I would add on the legal side is don't restrict freedom in the name of promoting it. That the license shouldn't be so adamant about trying to assure attribution or assure kinds of control against closure that it ends up restricting the things that the first set of users and inventors can do with it. This is a debate that we see to some extent in the data world, where under US law, data cannot be copyrighted, yet there are some who say in order to protect its freedom, we should license it with click-throughs or other kinds of licenses that make it less accessible rather than more accessible. And even for good purposes, I would say we should be wary of those kinds of restrictions.
I think that as a community, it's, even though I'm a lawyer, I will say this, that avoid bringing the law in as long as possible. You know, you hear all the time, I heard it today, someone was sitting near me and they were talking and they said, well, yeah, but of course, by the time you're hiring lawyers, the game is up, right? I mean, it's already over when you're bringing lawyers into it because everything is broken and nothing is fun anymore. So it's important when you're thinking about a license like this is to recognize what its purpose is. And it does have an important role to codify the norms that a community has come up with. But if you try and make a license drive that, you get really stuck in the minutia, and you also tend to lose focus on the larger things that you're trying to promote. So, you know, really, really think what your real goals are and what your community norms are, and focus on those, and focus on making those clear in a non-legal way. So people who get involved in this, who want to come in as hackers, who want to come in as you know, as middle school, high school kids who just are curious about mucking around with this stuff, they can quickly understand what's cool, what's not cool, where they should be. And once that's clear to everyone, yeah, you need to move on to a legal license, because you have companies that are doing great things and you have people who have to make large contracts and significant investments. But if you let that drive the conversation, you lose a lot of that kind of community spirit and ability to change as everything changes in open hardware.
I wanted to maybe clarify something. Maybe we should choose between using open source hardware or open hardware, because I think we are using the two terms. And I think we should, my opinion, we should use open hardware just to distance ourselves from open source, which is the source of something. So even if when you develop a hardware project, usually you go from the block diagram to the schematics with some CAD tools, then you draw the PCB with the same CAD tools or another CAD tools. There is a good French-based CAD tools called KiCad that is fully open source, and that allows you to publish the files and install and reuse these files and install the CAD tool freely. Then you do the schematics. Maybe you export that to PDF, and then you export the production files, the Gerber for the factory, and so on. So I think open hardware is closer to the definition of what we're talking about, from my opinion.
I would care to disagree with that.
I draw a stone in the
lake. Somebody's got to do it. I think of hardware design as really being a matter of open source or not, because when I open up a KiCad file or some other file, what I see in there is a bunch of hand-editable text that I can go in there and edit like any other source code. I can save that file, I can submit it to my SVN repository, and I can
if it's a KiCad file.
Yes, or if it's any number of other documented file formats. And we have, to some extent, allowed ourselves to be pushed around by what proprietary software and file formats we'd like to use, rather than what ideals we would like to have if everything were nice.
Which is not the case with Cadence or the very large CAD tools.
I think that if the most popular CAD software, suppose that Eagle and AutoCAD tomorrow released export formats that put all their output in human-readable XML files, not necessarily as their native format, but as an export format. If every one of them did that, or just the first few, I think almost everyone in this room would agree that it was better that we make sure our definitions say that, like for open source software, that for open source hardware, it really should be the source material for that hardware generation that we are sharing.
Maybe I can ask you guys to, especially the people here who are really involved with making the hardware, and to go back to Mike's point, I guess, of what are your goals in open sourcing it? What are the things you want to achieve, or what is the thing you might be trying to sort of codify in these licenses or in these definitions or in these terms?
One thing that all of us, when we build our projects, we'll encounter is we'll get that phone call from a company. Might be the first week after we put it on the blog, or we'll be a couple months. And I think the real question is, how do you handle that discussion? Somebody's very interested and they want to throw money at you, or they want to say, okay, well, you've got a great project and we want to use it. How do you use it? I think to me, the license is, how do we conduct those conversations? Because there are companies out there, and I'll be the first to admit, there are hundreds of companies that are just dying for open source electronics, open source hardware, open hardware, because the perception is it's transparent, we can adopt it quickly. They're not downloading schematics off the internet, their engineers aren't using it. What they're looking for is, how can we use it? How can we use it right? Can we work with that engineer? Can we work with the DIYer? How can we work with you? That's the question. I think a license can help that. I think it can grease the wheels, so to speak.
Xavier or Wendell, do you guys want to?
Well, why do you want to open your software? Just because you want to have other people to watch it and improve it and try to be in the kind of good circle where you have more and more, you have a community that can improve your work and then can understand, and maybe for educational purpose. I mean, so that's the same for hardware, with the slight difference that maybe you will have other hardware companies that can maybe add a new feature that you didn't think about it, and maybe add the modules to that, which is more difficult if you have to buy it and hack it. It's easier if you can just go from the original source files from the CAD file, so that's the main goal, to try to have these materials for others to improve. That's my.
I'm not a hardware person, and I'm not actually a software person either. I'm just a concerned citizen, and I think about, I was speaking to some guys this morning at breakfast and about RepRap. And that's really cool stuff there. And at the moment, the Free Software Foundation is working hard to try and make free software like a civil liberty. The idea that we should all have a right to be in control of a software that we operate. And I'm thinking, it'd be great if my children, or our future generations, they their fourth birthday, I don't know, maybe their third birthday, they get that device, that you know, that rapid prototyping device, that device that can make anything. You know, is that a kind of a right that we should be working towards from a hardware perspective? Is that kind of what where we're heading towards, so that, you know, in the future we're not having to depend upon, you know, manufacturing from remote distances and being delivered to us, but, you know, we should have a right to be able to build what we need in our own homes, to our own designs, and share those designs with each other. You know, is that where we're heading? Because that sounds really exciting to me. And so if that's where we're heading, then we really need to kind of future-proof what we're doing and work towards it. And so in that sense, it's very easy to get caught up in the here and now of, like, you know, how do we turn a product into making money? And that's great, but we also need to care about the definitions, because of where we're heading towards with that manufacturing. The here and now of the manufacturing is very important, but it shouldn't be necessarily leading the community. It should be part of the community rather than leading it. But certainly, I'd be interested to know whether is there a sense from the community about, you know, that future, about where, you know, what we want to be able to do with rapid prototyping and production of.
Not necessarily in prototyping, but I think there really should be much more freedom to do what you want with hardware that you have bought and paid for and have in your hands. It's just for a matter of social responsibility and ecological responsibility that you can repair your phone, that there's not this brick walling of the marketplace, that you really could say, I can modify this to do this other thing rather than buying another device. And any number of other things, there's really way too much restriction on what we can do, both because of, you know, real technological barriers. No, I can't build another chip to replace this one on my iPhone, but also artificial ones. That reverse engineering is needed for that kind of hacking now.
I'm sorry, I can't let that go, because I've had this discussion with somebody just a couple weeks ago. As a hacker, I'm constantly tearing things down. But it's different to tear something down and change its functionality. It's very different to design a product with that in mind. And finding a cell phone company that is willing to open up its API, the first thing you have to convince them is that when it breaks, and it will break, that you won't call up the phone and ask for tech support, because then it's expensive. So working that in to a license up front, to me, is a question of cost, really. Trust me, on the one hand, I would love a world where I could take my phone apart and take it apart, you know, but I need to, somehow the company needs, somebody, the person who provided it, has to be convinced that there is not a cost or a risk to doing that activity.
I wonder whether we're slipping into the assumption that everything we purchase comes with some license by default, and why do we not assume that when we purchase these things, we can, in the natural course, take them apart, fix them, make them work better, unless we have some enforceable obligation otherwise?
For the hardware, all the hardware hackers are based on that. It's like, when I buy it, it's mine, so I can just dismantle it and go as far as I can in the reverse engineering. So
one of the reasons I like to design open source hardware is to specifically design things meant to be hacked, that they can be changed. That's not necessarily going to be the case if you're making certain other classes of devices.
Yeah, are there suggestions that you guys would have? Because I think there is that distinction of, like, the things we're making, it's one thing for us to sort of open up or open source the things that we've made, but do you guys have thoughts or suggestions on how to deal with sort of things like cell phones or things like you know, other devices that are more closed, and maybe, you know, even in terms of, maybe you can make your own, you can hack your cell phone, but you won't be able to use it on the network or whatever. Like, how do we deal with those issues?
Actually, we do a lot of work on, because you mentioned cell phones and sort of accessing networks and things like that. And I think it really is important, especially in light of what Wendy was just saying about what you get when you buy something. And this is true for software, this is true for hardware, is remembering that the licensing is very important when you're talking about someone modifying it or someone a business taking it. But as a consumer, as a sort of a terminal end consumer, It is okay to say, I bought this and now it's mine, and I appreciate you selling it to me, I know you appreciate my money, but you are now out of the picture, and I am now the owner of this, and I'm going to do whatever I want. And if you don't like that, I don't care. But specifically to do with cell phones, and I think with other technologies that will rely on some sort of third-party provided service, the standard that we use for regular telephones, for landline telephones, is, you know, it doesn't harm the network, it's fine. You can plug in any fax machine you want. As long as it doesn't harm the network, it's fine. You can plug in any crazy cordless phone that you bought when you were 14 and was purple and had spots, as long as it didn't harm the network. And there's no reason why the cell phone network shouldn't be the same. There's no reason why, if, as long as your mobile phone doesn't harm Verizon's network, you can't just plug it in. And there's, you know, or AT&T's network, you shouldn't have to get some super extra special approval that not only does it not harm the network, but it also doesn't harm their business model, and it doesn't harm all sorts of other things that they care about. If it doesn't harm the network, you should be able to hack it to do whatever you want. And that should be the end of the conversation.
Yeah, actually that's one of the, again, going back to the reasons why I wanted to be here today, was that I think this community is much more likely not to have that attitude of being worried about if we get a customer complaint, because I think people who are probably building, you know, the customers for the people in here, they know not to make that call often. And I think it's a case of educating the customers or, you know, the citizens not to make those calls, and about creating an alternative approach rather than customer service. You know, it's community. You know, people use GNU Linux distributions, and, you know, they know to go to the community portal and ask their questions and make their bug reports. So I think there's models to show that you don't have to think about the traditional way of customer support. And certainly, you know, with us, you know, the free software movement represents a community of people who really care about that technology. And, you know, so we're hoping to find people in this room who want to produce products specifically to a specification which does work with fully free software. And today, in fact, we've published on our wiki, libreplanet.org/wiki/hardware, a specification from the Free Software Foundation for an endorsement criteria. So we're making public an endorsement criteria which we will endorse to our community for hardware which allows software to run on it, fully free software to run on it, to encourage people, hardware people, to actually say, yes, there's a market here. Let's on the road to producing completely open hardware, let's use this community as a pathway, use the free software community as a pathway to getting there. So, you know, if you're interested, do take a look at that.
Can you say a bit more about, like, what the kind of standards are for that?
Yeah, I mean, so the problem, what are the problems we have today? They're, you know, pretty annoying. The kernel Linux contains lots of proprietary software. It contains microcode. It contains, you know, secret stuff. So stuff that you cannot read. It's not human readable by a programmer. So there are Linux Libre kernels which take out all those blobs, all that non-free software. And distributions that we support, and there's about six of them now, they run fully free software. So if any non-free software is found, we get alerted and the software gets removed. I'm running at the moment an IBM ThinkPad, which runs Triskel, which is a distribution of fully free software. The wireless works on it. Everything works. So we're very close to it working now. We're very close to being there. We just need a production process. We need manufacturers who are dedicated to producing hardware that fits that standard. It may not be open hardware yet, but certainly an increasing number of components are open hardware to this or similar definition. And, you know, we'd like to see more. We'd like to encourage more entrepreneurs in this area to start to work with our community to produce those products.
That's a really interesting problem to have on software. I think on the hardware, on the open source hardware, open hardware, the question is, we're surrounded by proprietary toolkits. We're surrounded by VHDL compilers, and the idea that we'll ever see that source code is so foreign to us. It's a far distant dream. And IP cores, there's this question of, can open source hardware be open source if it's just a schematic, or do you have to have free and open FPGA code, which we've had some discussion here. I think in some senses that's a goal. It's a beautiful aspiration to have, but I don't think we'll see it in our lifetimes, because there's so much proprietary around in hardware. I think what we have to do as a license, as a definition, is carve out where we want to be open and how we want to be open in that space. I don't see the large semiconductor companies freeing up their cores, running it on, you know, open silicon.
So not to go reply to that exactly, because we've talked about it enough in some sense, but one of the questions we have is in a board that has a proprietary chip, or is based around a proprietary chip, how can we call that open source? There can be, even today, open source hardware designs that are composed entirely out of either generic or open source or otherwise non-proprietary components. And for example, a lot of analog designs could very easily be made out of standard op amps. You could specify any op amp, of which there are several meeting these criteria, will do for this job. You can use any quarter watt surface mount resistor here, and so on. It seems like both in that case of which components we use, because there's no way for us to say every board that's open source has to have fully open source components. That's ridiculous. We can't do that now, right? We all agree as a community that there's something we're calling open source here that is not fully open source software, fully open source file formats, fully open source components, fully open source resistors. Nobody's got an open
CAD
source
tools,
resistor.
Right.
CAD tools, mechanical CAD. Yeah. So I think what we should try and do is create not just a single norm, or not say that there's a single norm, but say here's something that's a bare minimum requirement, and then here's a continuum of different ways you could form a license to say how much of this design needs to fall under this super ultra open hardware license or something.
Maybe I want to, as I represent Honda, this alliance, I want to just read the definition that we found, maybe not perfect, but which is based on the Freedom Software Foundation Four Freedoms items. So the definition is to build a service for open hardware design, including a certification model and registration. And we adapted the four freedom from the FSF to first one, the freedom to use the device for any purpose. The second one, the freedom to study how the device works and change it to make it to do what you wish. Access to the complete design is a precondition to this. To redistribute the device and or design, remanufacture, for instance. And last one, the freedom to improve the device and or design and release your improvement and modify version in general to the public so that the whole community benefits. Access to the complete design is a precondition to this also.
I like it.
It's on hohonda.org.
I get one of the questions there, I guess, though, is like, what is the complete design, right? And this is something we've been going back and forth about in various venues, but Do you guys have some kind of like common language or just common sense idea of what you mean when you say that?
Well, one test that's been proposed is what can you put in a box and label as this is my design? And another has been to say something like, this is my design except for this chip, which is not my design. And I don't know how to resolve that.
It sounds as though one of the things that we're reaching for here is transparency to the user of, and especially as the user might become a producer and innovator him or herself, what is it that you're getting when you purchase this piece of hardware? And if we can help them to figure out where on the continuum of open to closed this might be, will they have the opportunity to study the interior, to download the schematics, to have one fabbed for themselves with their modifications on top of it? All of that can then feed into a request from the consumer, no, I want more, and build up some marketing around the open definitions of people demanding openness. does this definition give end users the tools to ask for what they need when they want to develop product?
Certainly the approach that Richard Stallman took when he launched the GNU project, you know, it took 10 years before there was a combination of GNU and Linux to actually have an operating system. But the definition, he always attempted to make the definition clear from the beginning. So components were being built that were free software, but you couldn't have a completely free operating system. So maybe that's the approach that the open hardware community should take, that yes, these components are open hardware, and these components are not, but we're moving towards, you know, a fully free stack at some point of hardware. Maybe that's just the right approach, to be clear that you don't make compromises in your definition, but then know how to label a product that someone ends up with, knowing which components are open and which are yet not possible to make open.
Maybe we should take a couple of questions, I guess.
Hi, my name is Colin McGonigal. I'm a mechanical engineer, so I'm kind of a little oddball in the bunch. But a lot of stuff I'm working on right now actually isn't electronic related, but I want to release it openly. But as I start to work on it, I'm realizing that the mechanical community is very closed, everybody thinks they have the best idea in the world and they're not going to share it with anyone. But as I start to, you know, work through opening it and doing patent research, I'm starting to find, well, maybe, you know, some of the ideas that I actually, you know, came up with may have already been patented. So if I were to, you know, create and open up, and then 2 months later some guy comes to me and says, hey, that's a patent infringement, but I'm not actually building it. I'm, you know, just selling the components so that, you know, somebody at home could build it. How would that look legally? Would I be held liable for you know, aiding and abetting the world to build really cool stuff, or, you know?
Did we start this panel off with the obligatory disclaimer that we can't give legal advice from the stage? But in general terms, to speak about other hypothetical situations that might be similar to this one.
How much does it cost?
You're right, first off, to note that the patent, the core of the patent right is make, use, or sell. And then there's the penumbra of problems around that, notably the inducement of infringement, so that even if what you were doing was selling components that some end user had to assemble to make the final functioning device, if the only possible function of the device were to infringe a patent, that selling of components would be found generally to induce the infringement of a patent. Now, there are plenty of other caveats to that explanation, cases where you might be able to find prior art to invalidate the patent claimed against you, and alternate branching pathways for the patent claims and litigation demands to get to before it reached a judgment. But it's a murky area.
But is that something we really have to worry about if we're just kind of posting some SolidWorks files on the internet, or?
Well, if it's SolidWorks files, it's a lot like Limor's cell phone jammer. She's not, you know, saying you should build one or selling parts to it. Just saying, you know, if you really wanted to, this is how you do it.
There's a question of enablement, and I know that this is a murky section of the legal system in the U.S. now. It is somewhat fluid. So the disclaimers have been said. It's a murky area.
And the patent system doesn't outlaw knowledge, so if you're talking about how this might be done, if you're not encouraging people to do it or making a profit off selling the parts designed to do it.
The Free Software Foundation supports a campaign called End Software Patents. And whilst it's not a campaign to end hardware patents, there is certainly a lot of information that you can get from our campaign which will sort of guide you, I think, towards you know, how you can handle that issue as well.
So
softwarepatterns.org.
Hey, we got a lot of
people. Yeah, we have a lot of questions, so maybe, sorry, we can try to go through these quickly if you want to.
All right, brief.
Hello?
Okay, good. All right, briefly, I'd just say that I agree with you that we want goals, and I agree that we want to spell out what activities and freedoms we want to safeguard, but I would caution against saying right, because when we say right, it implies that the government will enforce that right, which means the government will then be able to hijack that right to use force for whatever purpose it wishes. So I would want to think more in terms of how to protect against the scenario we just brought up within the framework that already exists, rather than saying, okay, America now needs to recognize a basic fundamental human right to open hardware, because once we do that, it's an excuse for military action, it's an excuse for police action. So I'd rather it be more of a civil legal thinking like we were just having. That's all I was going to say.
Thank you. Next? Maybe over here.
Yeah. Hi. It looks like the open hardware community is just about at the point where the free software / open source community was about, say, 10, 15 years ago. And there was the problem of terminology, where free software was, there was a lot of confusion, and there still is. I mean, I hear Peter say, like, Libre and gratis and stuff like that, and it's whenever you say free software, you have to explain it. Where open source just kind of came in and took over, and that was just a really good term that everybody can understand. And now today, we're at the Open Hardware Summit. The license that we're about to present, I think in an hour, is called the Open Source Hardware License, so we're at the same confusion. So could I insist that you guys decide right now what it's going to be called?
Can I
we could take a poll.
Can I react to one thing you said, because I think this is a question of economic norms in the difference between free software and open software. In hardware, we don't have that. To some extent, we don't have that because it is assumed that hardware costs something to build. There is a cost. One thing that we don't have in the open hardware world right now, and I'm happy to see it not in the license, is an enforced margin. So for instance, we've not really heard as a community many people say, you must resell your hardware at cost. That, you know, thank goodness. But I think that's why we've not really gone into the free hardware necessarily as much as the free software.
But I don't mean the free hardware. I just mean open hardware or open source hardware.
I'll put my vote down for open hardware, but
I'm okay with a vote as long as everybody agrees and we stick to it from now on.
I think maybe
we'll
we should try to avoid too much bike sharing. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
So next. Right. So next question, maybe over here.
I had a specific question. Speaking as someone who shipped free software, a Linux kernel in a proprietary product, and I believe did it correctly. What are going to be, or what should be, the dividing lines between a mere aggregation and a derivative work? In other words, what is the hardware equivalent to the linking question? For example, I'm holding a Pocket Linux box, which is now available in any mall in America, an Android phone. I think we can all agree that it's very unfortunate that most of them have the kernel TiVoized. You can't recompile and install the kernel, except thanks to the mmap min address bug. But there are actually two processors in here. One is running the Linux kernel. The other is running an entirely closed and proprietary radio firmware. I'm upset that I can't replace the Linux kernel. I'm not that worried about the radio firmware right now. Later I might care. Peter talks about his ThinkPad with all free software on it, except that I'm sure there is DSP firmware in the hard drive that you don't have the source to. Question that I ran into, you know, okay, I can have an open source free software kernel. I have to release the source to my driver modules that load into it. I can have a closed proprietary user space application running on that. When I get down to the FPGA component, you know, I probably can't combine a GPL module with proprietary code in the same FPGA, but can I have two FPGAs talking to each other? Where is that dividing line, or where should it be?
Are you aware of the like the OpenBSC project aiming at developing the BTS in open source?
I've heard of that. I think it's a little while before it's going to fit in here. But
yeah. Has developed the same thing on the other end, on the end user on the terminal, for both the application processor and the baseband processor for one model of phones. So, and it's working now. So with this phone, and maybe other phone in the future, you can have a full kernel running on both processors.
Well, there, I mean, you run into the NDA issue with the system processor. But I was actually just meaning this as an example versus the more general question of what is the hardware equivalent to linking? Or the line between a derivative work and a mirror aggregation, where you can have components under different licenses?
I don't think we have one today.
Connectors, packages, pinouts?
I think right now...
We see
shields and Arduino to some extent as a distinction, so there's a physical interconnect insofar it's hardware. But I think that's a rough boundary. It's not really well explored. Is it chip to chip? Is it PCB to PCB? Depending on where you draw the system architecture, it's different.
It sounds like a definition that belongs in a license, not a...
I think it's a key question.
I think there's maybe a lot of licenses. Complicated...
In applying it in the software realm, it was very clear to me what the rules were, maybe, and it's very unclear in the hardware realm.
Very quickly, we don't have this problem there in Latin America. We just say software delivery, which means freedom. But I'd like to say that I enjoyed the idea of judging component by component. It makes things much clearer. I'd like to say that you don't have to worry about the problem of everything seems proprietary around me in hardware development nowadays, because like 30 years ago it was that way, and we did in software like almost 99% of it. So like be positive, we'll do it. And also, there's the question of what we want to use as criteria and what is enforceable and which set of law can be used to enforce. Like, I believe that a board that contains several chips, some fully freely described and others totally secret, it could be viewed such as something like a non-fully free distro, you have certain components that are not free. But then, how do you describe what is a free component? It could be a set of protocols, but then how do you enforce that the protocols of the next version that you release are updated? And do we have laws that are enforceable to obligate somebody to update the protocol of it? The interface of a chip, so it's a question mostly for the lawyers, which kinds of law can we use to enforce in for the rest of the people, or actually for everybody, which are the criteria, and then we have to find the intersection of it.
So I think we're getting near the end of our time, and I know Aya had hope to have some time later to really try to flesh out some of these details. So I just wanted to thank everyone, and hopefully we can continue this discussion in lots of different ways.